Welcome to News from the Breach, a Dragon Prince podcast.
Good morning, my little rays of sunshine.
We're your hosts, Kaylee and
Yana.
Hi.
Hey.
Good morning. We're doing another kind of morning episode for us. Today we're talking about chapters 3 and 4 from Book Earth. And I think I can only speak for myself, I'm a bit overwhelmed because these episodes or these chapters were so full of stuff. So much new background information, and kind of trying to make notes was a bit of a disaster for me.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But as usual, I'll read the synopsis and then we'll get into chatting about the content of these two chapters. So, chapter 3, Breathtaking. Callum tries to deal with the unexpected return of Rayla after 2 years of no contact. King Ezrin welcomes Sabea and Azimondius to Catullus with celebrations and food. However, when the portrait signaling peace is defiled, the anger of the past arises once more. Claudia and Terry reach the top of the Storm Spire, where a fierce battle against Ibis ensues. Chapter 4, Through the Looking Glass. Zubea retells the story of Aravos's dark past and his effect on the past of Zadia. When she reveals the secrets of the magic mirror, Aravos's presence becomes painfully evident. Claudia prepares to open the chrysalis and free the being so it can guide her to Aravos's prison. The tension between humans and Sunfire elves boils over as Lucia the architect dishonors a sacred ritual. Boom, yeah. Boom, boom.
Pretty dark. We don't have a lot of jelly tarts because it's so, grim.
Pretty grim.
Yeah.
It's pretty grim. So, yeah. So we would start with chapter 3. It's called Breathtaking. And it starts off with Raylum. You look nice, Callum. That's always a nice way to greet someone you've not seen for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then we find out her name is Stella, the little cuddle monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed Stella had Aravos's, or the key of Aravos or whatever, and she makes the star side of it glow.
Found that interesting. Yeah, true. Yeah, we saw this also in the last episode, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And Rayla refers to herself as nervous and edge frazzled, which I quite liked.
And Stella's cuddle mama.
And Stella's cuddle mama, yeah.
That's super cute.
Interesting seeing this kind of maternal side to Rayla as well. We haven't seen that so far.
Yeah, but we also see it. So everyone has now a favorite animal.
True.
You know, S has Zim, and Callum has Bait, and Rayla has Stella.
Yeah, they've all got their companions nearby.
True.
Yeah,
I find it a little bit interesting that, Rayla does want to speak with Callum or, do something. And Callum just wants to go to bed and doesn't want to speak to her because he's still angry that she just left.
Yeah.
Didn't give any signal or life sign whatsoever.
Yeah, it's pretty hard just leaving him with a letter and not giving him the chance to, join her or kind of have an opinion about it. Yeah, I'm not surprised that Callum's kind of pissed, really. But yeah, as a viewer, obviously, you just want him to be happy to see her and stuff. But yeah, he's got some things to go through, I suppose.
Yeah. And, her quest failed because she didn't find Viren and couldn't take revenge or something,
mm-hmm.
and was just gone for nothing, essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, she still loves him and cares for him because also he, she puts a pillow behind his neck and washes his saliva away while he's sleeping. So that's quite cute.
Yeah, she's being quite loving to him then, yeah. Yeah, and she said something about because of her need for vengeance, she almost lost the most important thing or the best thing she ever had, which was Callum, so.
Another thing I have seen in this scene. because there's an animation error. So the production team was a little bit tight on money, I would say, and on time. And Callum's scarf disappears from his neck at one point. But the scarf is somehow important because, yeah, we see this later on in another scene with Bait and in the outro. So
yeah, true. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that that symbolic thing was the thing that got that they made a mistake with. Yeah. Okay, so Ezrin has planned the dragon visit, and they're waiting for Callum to show up and do his Shebelau thingy. And yeah, Apelli talks to Ezrin about her concerns, or she says that people have come to her in confidence about the dragons coming. And it's not just that they're coming, but that they're going to hold this greeting ceremony in the Valley of the Graves, and that that might be a bit unsensitive, considering that a lot of the people buried there were killed because of dragons or killed by dragons. Yeah. But that seems to be why Ez wants to do it there, because that's embracing what happened in the past and moving on. I guess that's kind of the whole theme with this episode, is this kind of embracing the pain and trying to build something more positive out of it.
Yeah, also like a little bit of forgiveness. He knows that he's doing this, but he does it on purpose.
But it's definitely, it's a bold move for people who are in a lot of pain and maybe not quite ready to move on yet, but pushing them into it.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to be like this to do something, you know, to advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're just stuck, then nothing positive can happen either. Yeah.
So the dragons arrive. The people are a little bit afraid of them because they are so big. Like, not Sim, but Subeya is really, 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 really is huge. And also Tingli. She sends out electric sparks, and the hairs are a little bit sparkly.
Like, standing
out.
Yeah, it's cool. And Soren's hair goes crazy.
Yeah. So. Reminded me of a lot of anime characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Yeah, and there was a kid that was really excited about the dragons landing, and their parents, like, were pulling them back away from the dragons again, which I get, you know? Even if your kid sees a big, lovely, friendly-looking dog, even, you would hold them back because you don't know how that dog's going to be. But, you know, like, this dragon that's absolutely massive and terrifying, I completely get that. Stay back here, kid. Let's watch from a distance and see what happens.
And the child is, you know, innocent and doesn't know any danger and doesn't know the history, so the kid is just curious, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But it's a nice symbolism of being okay, this person who doesn't know all that, they're just super excited to see these dragons landing.
Yeah. And the introduction of the Queen Subeya reminded me of Game of Thrones, like the lot of titles.
Oh yeah.
So many titles. Yeah, and then to, wait for Callum with his prismatic Shablau, we have comedy stylings of Crown God Zorn, which we tell you later on in the jelly tarts, because there's so many.
Surprisingly funny.
Yeah, totally. And we see the baker, I forgot his name.
Barius.
Has some refreshments, and it's just one. A really big jelly tart. And we also see anime sparkly eyes by Ezrin, or on Ezrin's face. And Callum destroys the whole thing with his rainbow balls.
But because of the explosion, Zubeya gets to taste the amazing jelly in the tart. And she says, "In the name of the dragons and the first elves," also very Game of Thrones, "I declare this the most delicious jelly in all of Zadia."
Yeah. And that's a huge thing for Barius, I would say.
A massive compliment for Barius.
Yeah. Then we get to the painting, which has a hole in it, where the queen's face is, like Subeya's face. And we see S and Sim really small in the foreground of the painting. And big speech of Esrin, who is angry and wants to remind the people that you have to keep both anger and love in your heart and move on, essentially. It's a big speech. Maybe this is not so good summarized, but...
No, that's about it. I mean, that's the most important thing he said. That he's angry, that we're all angry, you know? They've all experienced death and pain through these centuries of war between the magical side and the non-magical side. But it's also a theme that keeps coming up, huh? Like this cycle that keeps happening. And the interesting thing about this speech as well, and why it was so difficult for me to take notes on, was because that was happening with this whole battle with Ibis and Claudia, which we're going to bring up as well. It was all very tied together, you know, seeing this horrible battle where actually, you know, two people you like and you don't want either of them to die, but then you realize one of them's going to die while Ezrin's giving this heartfelt speech and is like a ghost in the background. And it was very moving and very sad at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, this, I find this also interesting, the combination of the three characters, essentially. Stop the cycle of violence, loss, and pain, and then tell stop. And they did also stop in this tiny moment.
Yeah.
But then continue to fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so just going back shortly to the... you know, the Valley of the Graves or whatever. Ez is trying really, really hard to move things on, but it's really difficult.
Yeah. And then we have a really nice song by Corvus, a song of loss, love and loss, with a cello, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of my favorite instruments, by the way. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. I tried to find out some more information about the song to see if, like, I don't know, if it had any more kind of background or something. But I just found that online lots of people had already, like, put notation up, and there's already, like, guitar versions and violin versions and stuff like that. But it seems like this piece was also written for... it was in previous seasons, but we didn't really notice it. It was more like background music. So it was really nice that it got this really nice moment. And yeah, along with the battle as well, it was very intense.
No.
And yeah, I love the cello as well.
No.
Yeah, and lovely to see that Corvus has another, what do you say, another string of his bow, you know, another talent. What can't Corvus do?
Totally. Yeah, and then still in the valley, we have the statue also of Hera, and they light up some candles, which is also really cool or symbolic. I think during the song.
Also. I think so as well, yeah.
And, you know, a little bit of healing process going on, maybe. Yeah. And there's also the introduction of Rayla again in after 2 years. And S has missed her and hugs her on the spot.
That's really nice, yeah.
She wasn't sure if she still accepted. Yeah, it's really heartfelt moment that she's still, you know, like, yeah, okay. Apart from being not there for 2 years, you're still in our group.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happened.
Yeah,
that's really good.
They went through a lot together, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and just from a viewer's perspective, I think it's maybe a bit hard for us maybe to sense how long it has been.
Yeah.
Because for us, we just go from the last season to this season, and it's like for us, like, she's not been away at all. But maybe that kind of mirrors the, like, Ezrin's feelings anyway. Oh, it's Rayla, you know? Rayla's great.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have the message of Ibis with the last breath. Like a hologram. And we hear from Ibis that the fallen star has returned and the staff of Ziad has been stolen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all a bit crazy. And they don't know at that point that Ibis has died either.
Ah, true. Yeah, he didn't mention
By the way, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And the staff, we've talked about it before, but the staff of Ziyad is then Ziyad's staff, this kind of first mage who we saw in the first season, second season. And
in the intro.
In the intro of the old intro. And that Ziyad had been given it. He was gifted it from one of the great ones, I remember. And the great ones comes up again in the next chapter that we're going to talk about when Zubayr tells us about a bit of the history, the unknown history with Aravos and everything. Just it's nice to kind of be reminded of these other backstories that we've had before as well.
But it was also a lot of information.
A lot of information. So the fallen star has returned. So on that note, we could go to the Storm Spire.
Yeah. So we first see that Claudia and Terry are still in love and are joking around like nothing bad is going on whatsoever.
Yeah, they're just being cute and having a nice time and looking at the nice view, which is breathtaking.
Yeah.
And then we get the moment of, I actually have a magic thingy in my bag that can literally do that. And Terry, slightly alarmed, says, please never do that. But we've seen that spell a couple of times already, and it's really not nice.
Yeah. Also, Claudia's breathtaking.
Claudia's breathtaking. Yeah,
so true. Really, really cute.
Also reminds me of the meme with Keanu Reeves. Do you know the meme?
Not sure.
I think Keanu Reeves is giving an interview about Cyberpunk before it comes out. It's already a couple of years old. And someone in the crowd shouts, "You're breathtaking!" And then Keanu Reeves just turns around and says, "You're breathtaking!" And points at everyone. It's like, "You're all breathtaking!" It's a really nice meme, nice moment.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Didn't know it. nice.
Then we'll have to put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
And I just noticed that Claudia was then playing with her hair, her plait, that's going white as well, and seemed to be like thinking about it. So, yeah, it was nice to just have this character moment where she looks like she's realizing that she's changing, you know? And it was after fooling around with Terry and then kind of looking a bit sad at her hair. Like, okay, like maybe that's the person she wants to be, this person that's fooling around, but she's got a serious mission. And she's done seriously awful things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and then she's going looking for the staff, huh? Like, just after that. And finds this table, which isn't a dragon-sized table, but a dragon-sized...
Button. Yeah, which leads to a lot of stairs going around. And she climbs up with a flashlight in her hand, which is apparently hot because she waves like, ouch, ouch, ouch.
Did she?
Yeah.
I thought she just waved because it wasn't working properly.
No. She used it to go down. And then when she's down, the flames are coming up and she puts it off. Like, I don't know how. And then she waves her hand like, ouch, ouch, ouch. But maybe it's also because the batteries are not working.
I thought it was more like, the batteries are out. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, but now, look, we have other magical light.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a huge treasure chamber with lots of stuff. And she finds some amulet with rune, which goes well with her earrings. And we see in a video by the creators that it's a dragon scale that has been engraved with a rune. So I don't know anything further. And they point out that there is something behind it, but maybe it's in this book or in another book.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Not sure about the rune, essentially.
Yeah. It looks very important.
Yeah, totally. There are also other treasures or runes or amulets or something, but
that's the one that grabs her eye.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one that she takes and took puts it on, tucks it into her jacket.
And then she uses the corrupted sun staff for doing magic and finding Viren staff. It's a, you know, like Lux Revelare, close staff or something, I don't know.
Lux Revelare, which means revealing light.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a chest that starts glowing.
Why is it only this chest? Why is it, you know, lighting up?
Yeah, it's a good question. Maybe because she knows what she's looking for. It reveals the thing that she's searching for. Yeah,
could be.
I'm not sure. But I found it interesting as well that she's not using dark magic for those things, you know?
Yeah.
It's this, it is primal magic, but from her corrupted staff.
Yeah.
This corrupted sun magic. But I'm a bit unclear how that still works, even though it's corrupted, like, and yeah.
Yeah, for that means. For tiny stuff like this, I don't know.
Yeah, like, why can't she use that instead of the dark magic stuff that she's using, you know? Unless primal magic just can't do the kind of stuff that dark magic does. I was just thinking about it also because of her hair and, you know, because of her changing and stuff. If she knows she can do this corrupted magic, why doesn't she just stick to it? And then she's not kind of going more to the dark side then. Anyway.
Yeah. But maybe the dark magic wouldn't reveal a sword or a staff. You know, like...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, there's just different purposes.
Yeah. Dark magic is only for fighting or, you know, doing bad stuff.
You have to have bad intentions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of like the ingredients that you use, you know? Like, if you make a meal with, like, good stuff, it's going to be really tasty. Like, and if you use it with bad stuff, it's just going to be evil.
I'm doing a meal with only ingredients I don't like. Yeah. Maybe it tastes good. Spoiler, no.
I don't know. Anyway, in this chapter, she uses a lot of this corrupted
sun
magic anyway.
Yeah.
She does... Sorry, let's go back a bit. How did the battle begin? I've gone foggy.
Then Ibis appears in the doorway and says something about over my dead body. Hey, okay, yeah, sure. You don't have to say it.
Oh, dear.
And Ibis uses a spell like Accio in Harry Potter. To grab the staff from Claudia's hand. And that's when the battle begins.
Yeah.
And they use sky spells and the corrupted sun spells, but also a little bit of dark magic. Because when Ibis flies up to the top of the...
Top of the staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the button. And then Claudia uses not good-smelling feng shoes and gets a snake form.
Yeah, she turns herself into a snake, kind of. Yeah, she gets, like, snake eyes. And
And also speaks a little bit like a snake.
True,
like,
And the spell was... I wrote it down somewhere.
That's a dark magic spell. Like, Mroth, Ikans, Gnirlik, Evig. Give me your coiling, snaky form.
Yeah, that was a bit... I don't know. I didn't like it. But it's just because I don't like her doing such horrible things.
Yeah, sure.
And it did remind me a bit of Aladdin, you know. And Jafar turns himself into this big snaky thing as well. Yeah, and then she grabs Ibis then and is crushing him. And then Ibis uses Aspero Frigus to freeze the snaky form, and kind of I found it interesting then that it only froze the snaky bits, and then she kind of just leaps out of it, so I'm not quite sure how that magic works. It's kind of cool that she didn't lose her legs, but yeah, I don't know, I found it not so easy to believe, but you know, it's all magic, and you have to believe it to some level, I guess.
Also, that this magic is used by Callum for the claw balls. You know, this rainbow balls, rainbow flag thingy.
Yeah.
Same magic, but the one is flying around the balls, and the other one is putting eyes on a snake. You know, it's It's weird.
Yeah, but we've had, you know, from the actual spell itself, we know that Aspero is the breathing spell.
Okay.
The wind spell.
Yeah.
And Aspero Frigus we've had before as well, that it freezes stuff. It's like frozen air.
Okay, okay.
But it was interesting then that he like touched it and it froze. It didn't seem there was much to do with wind going on. But I guess wind or air is kind of Ibis's whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's all connected somehow.
Yeah, he's a Skywing elf.
Oh, was.
Yeah.
Ibis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One interesting thing I read in the wiki, because I didn't see it directly. Ibis draws a sword against Claudia, and it's a sword of Rayla's mother.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, her mom had the crazy sword, and her dad had like a bow or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or chains. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, they both had really cool weapons.
No. Yeah, and then at the end, Ibis wants to kill Claudia and is doing the Avada Kedavra spell. And then Terry kills Ibis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also breathtaking. Yeah, really sad.
Really sad. Yeah, that's really hard. I find as well, like with this series, they don't really hold back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot of kids or family series and stuff, they don't really kill off the main characters. And we've kind of gotten connected with Ibis now. And Ibis was in the battle and taught Callum how to fly and all this. And then it's like, oh, in one episode he's feeding a toddler dragon. And the next episode he gets murdered. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's a little bit Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah, true. It's surprising.
Yeah.
And shocking. Totally. I mean, you know, we already lost Harrow and stuff, but we didn't actually see Harrow die as well. And this was more graphic.
Yeah.
But maybe that also fits with the fact that, you know, the kids are getting older, the audience is getting older as they watch it. I don't know. But still, it's quite shocking somehow. Yeah,
totally. Okay, I only have left maybe speaking about the title. So we know the view at the top of the Storm Spire is breathtaking.
Yeah.
Claudia is breathtaking. Yeah. The dark magic thingy is breathtaking. And Ibis is also
using his last breath.
Yeah, to send a message. Which is also interesting. You know, he just puts on the sign to send it.
Yeah.
But how is it recording? You know,
we didn't see him speak the message and send it. It just happened.
Yeah.
Like he sent it just from his brain. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Yeah, a couple of spells in there that are a little bit like, okay, we don't really see the mechanics of how it works, but okay.
No. Do you have anything else?
No, I just have more of the spells. Lux Revelare, Velux Ignis, which is rapid fire, which is also, Claudia also used, Arma Virtutis, which was weapons of virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one thing I just thought, when Ibis uses the magic, you know, with his last breath, it's interesting. I don't know if maybe that spell was then more powerful because it was his last breath. It made me think of, you know, the weapon they used to kill Avazandum, which was the unicorn horn, and wasn't it with the queen's last breath?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No.
Like, I think Viren had the queen's last
breath in
a jar.
True. Yeah, true.
So it's not the not the first time
we've had a
powerful spell with the last breath.
True. What was the spell? Because I have some one spell with no further note. Ritke Arcus Ignis, maybe? Or is it something else? Maybe I have to read it.
I don't have that one.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, no, I didn't catch that one. Okay. There was so much going on.
Yeah, yeah. So many spells.
Yeah.
only one dark magic, but a lot of sky and corrupted sun spells.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we can just go back to it again shortly. We had in this battle, a lot of the time we had Ezrin there as well. It was also really, yeah, the whole thing. It was so emotional with the music and Ezrin and it was a really good episode,
yeah, actually. Yeah, totally.
Really hard, but really good. It also got better rated. It's a 7.8 now, again.
Okay.
Next chapter?
Next chapter. There's a lot going on. And we have another intro. So the intro, the first sequence of the intro stays the same. But then normally we have Viren crying a little bit. But now we have Callum.
Holding the key of Aravos, yeah, and being turned into a pawn.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Aravos uses the pawn to look and smile.
Mm-hmm.
Really crazy.
Yeah, I was really shocked when I saw it. Yeah, I watched the intro and like, and then I had to go back and watch the intro for the last couple of episodes to see if it had been a different person every time and I hadn't noticed, but no, it's always been Viren up until this point, and for this specific episode it's Callum.
Yeah. Really, as I wrote down, holy shit. Yeah, really crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, in this episode we have three main points. First, the heroes, then the Viren and Claudia and Terry. And we also are in Lux Aurea, and yeah, I have some scenes there. Also, the scenes are really moving fast in between, you know, totally, like switching back and forth from one place to another really fast.
And quite meaningfully,
yeah,
as well.
True, yeah, like, true.
At the point when they're in Lux Aurea and the architect says, no open flames, no open flames, and then it cuts back to the Valley of the Graves where they are, to a big fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah. It's cool. I think they've been working on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Connecting it all together. Maybe that's also why it's been so difficult for us watching these two episodes and making notes and trying to figure out how to unpack it.
Yeah.
For you listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very cool, very interesting to watch.
We have less spells, but more background story, as we mentioned before. A lot of history going on. So I would say we start maybe with first Lux Aurea, then Viren and stuff. Yeah, so we see a sun elf, which is called, who's called Yonis, honoring the dead mother. And the human architect Lucia, who doesn't want to see the tents burning up with the open fire. Yeah, they fight a little bit and shout at each other. And so Yonis is like, yeah, it's a spirit flame and has to burn through the whole night. And so the flame can return to the light of the sun in the morning. But Lucia is like, yeah, you can't endanger everyone because of your superstition. So the emotions are really tense. Yeah, she just puts the fire out.
Yeah, and the angry elf then turns into like their lava form, and actually they're just taking the bucket from her, but in the process burn Lucia's hands. And Gren shows up because Gren and Marcos saw that there was some, or heard that there was something going on.
They saw the smoke of
That was it.
Of the bucket or the spirit flame.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Gren shows up and the elf sees Gren and then immediately realizes what they've done and looks very regretful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting scene, I thought, and that it explains a bit more about their kind of religion that goes with being a Sunfire elf and stuff and this belief. But it shows very much that they don't know anything about each other.
Yeah, like, totally.
That the Sunfire elf didn't know that it was not okay to have a flame in the camp. You'd think they'd have said something and like made a big announcement, because this could have been avoided, you know?
Yeah.
He could have done the mourning just outside of the camp or
yeah,
something.
Sure.
It's like,
but where do they cook, you know? Like,
Yeah.
Stuff like this. So there was a huge place in the middle where nothing stands.
Yeah.
So of course you put there your spirit thing.
Yeah. But yeah, massive miscommunication. And I thought it was also a complete overreaction from Lucia. I mean, she is the architect and she knows how dangerous it is with flames. But that flame didn't look so dangerous. And he said he was going to watch it the whole night.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a shame then that she didn't step back and be like, okay, this is this person's belief.
Yeah.
And instead, in his eyes at least, stopped his mother's spirit being able to be, what was it? Returned to the sun?
Returned to the sun, yeah.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tensions are running high.
Yeah, totally.
In Luxoria and also in Catullus with the whole now we're all friends thing.
Yeah, it's like forced, you know, like, hey, you are now together and just deal with it.
Yeah, it's like the elves need a big book on the humans and human behavior and humans the other way around. But you think they could have also, you know, was Lucia the only architect around? Couldn't they maybe have found an architect who was up for the job of helping the elves rather than like, oh, we did you a favor, like, you should be thankful. Don't know how many architects there are around Catullus.
I don't know. Maybe it was not so much high paid or something. I don't know, you know.
Oh, it's a shame because, I mean, obviously we like the elves and we want everyone to like the elves.
Yeah.
But yeah, a massive misunderstanding.
Yeah, it's really sad. But maybe now the communication gets better. And also it was interesting to see the switching back and forth. You know, Esrin with speech about anger, love, loss, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, on the other side, okay, yeah. Putting out a fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like on what, there's big words and good intentions. And then there's kind of people on the ground living these situations.
Yeah.
And having to deal with it. Then should we go to Clary and Viren?
Yes. Yeah, Terry is really unhappy about killing Ibis and looks really sad. But Gloria is like, no, nothing happened and here is your staff. Cool. Ruin doesn't want the staff
at all. He's scared.
Yeah, he's really scared of the power and a little bit afraid of Claudia, I think.
Yeah, I had the same impression. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Claudia is just excited and wants to open the chrysalis as soon as possible. But of course, she waited 2 years for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah.
Hey, let's do this. She is also sleeping without trouble. But Terry is awake, crying. And it was his hardest day of his life. But here, I thought Rurin, you know, is a little bit more human again because he listens closely and responds also okay-ish and says something about in the name of love, you will perform acts so unforgivable that you will never forgive yourself. So shows a little bit of remorse, actually. And then, how do you live with this? And how do I deal with this? Get a grip. Like, thanks, Viren, for nothing.
Yeah. After Terry had given Viren so much emotional support 2 chapters ago, it was pretty harsh, Viren.
But then I thought, yeah, that's Viren. That's Viren again.
Yeah.
As we know
him. He's not changed that much.
No, no. But still, he's missing his butterflies. So it's still a thing, you know? Where is his youth thing?
Yeah, does he still need his butterflies if he's so scared of dark magic that he's not using it, actually? Did he wake up like that every morning? Was that just his, like, also his morning face? Or was it always after he...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe also because of the spell reawakening him, he doesn't need it anymore.
Ah, maybe.
So, yeah. No, interesting. We don't know.
He's so full of magic that he doesn't need it.
Or the people forgot it.
Should we do that with the butterflies? Nah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then... interesting thing. Mm-hmm. So we have the being at the end, mm-hmm. which is a creature butterfly. So maybe Rurin has to eat it and gets and really young. Yeah.
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 Let's see.
So spell time. The spell needs the first light, not the second, third, or fourth.
No.
Viren doesn't want to, and Claudia's just like,
let's do this.
I'm going to do this. And which is good. I mean, did Viren even know the spell? I mean...
Not sure.
Don't know.
Because it's also a big spell. She does it also three times. Iso, Kimsok, Rui, Murf, Creme, Delik, Silurze. Chrysalis, child, emerge from your cosmic ooze.
And then the butterfly creature is emerges born.
With green slimy blood or I don't
slime,
know.
Yeah. Ectoplasm. Yeah. I don't know.
And she is out of breath after the dark magic.
Yeah, and actually both of them, Viren and Terry, run up and support her afterwards. Oh. Yeah, it took a lot out of her. I was trying to look to see as well if her hair had gone more white than through it, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I also looked closely, but I don't think it happened as fast. Maybe it changes over time.
But I think the spell so far that we've seen kind of take so much energy out of someone or goes on for so long was this spell when Viren was on the Storm Spire sucking the energy out of the baby dragon, out of Zim. And that was like chanting over and over and over again.
Hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
No.
It was a very big spell. I mean, it was animated very big and lots of like lightning and energy and...
things flying around.
Yeah, true. In the air. It was everything was flying around their heads.
Little tsunami. And what's also interesting, the wings of the being is like star magic, star elf things. Like,
I didn't...
there's a NASA picture on the wings again.
Ah, I'll have to look more closely next time. Okay.
So, like, really beautiful.
Yeah.
So the wings are beautiful, the rest isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't see the being in front, from the front.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Haven't seen it so closely. Yeah.
Really, really dark. Now, let's move to the heroes.
Yep.
Callum is still sad about the absence of Rayla and makes sarcastic comments. Like, she doesn't know the name of Ibis and something. And, the dragons want to leave, but Sim doesn't. He's a little bit hiding.
Mm-hmm. He wants to stay with the eyes.
Yeah, but, why not leave with them altogether? Because Opelli and the High Council is going to take care of the people. She can manage, or they can manage. And Corvus hands Aswan his backpack with lots of cool stickers and, you know, like things to put on.
Yeah.
And Barius has another thing. He invented a new jelly tart with mushy brown stuff called brown sludge tarts.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. And Aswan is suspicious and asks, hey, is this like the weird bread that only Bait liked? And we see Bait tapping and
getting very excited. Yeah.
Exciting. And we learned that the bread is called Krumpernickel. But no, it's not the same. It's better. And Rayla is still not sure if she's still included. But yes, of course she is.
Yeah.
Aswan says, hey, come, jump on.
That was nice because she said, oh, I didn't know if it would be okay for me to come. And he turns around and says, we need you to come.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Exactly. And Callum and Soren fly on Priva and have to take a quick stop to take the mirror and Soren's toothbrush.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
At the end, they're also waiting for Bait.
Yeah.
And Bait turns up with Callum's scarf.
And in this scene, also regarding the mirror, Soren sees it and says something like, I hope you're careful with magic because it can change people. Like, refers to his father and sister.
Yeah. And that's also interesting, related to what we learn about Aravos now, that he targets mages as well. It's also a wise warning that Callum's also going to be a target from Aravos as well.
Yeah, we learned this now because Zubeya tells all the history, the flashback of what's going on, what happened there. And also, who is the star, fallen star person? It's a star touch elf, one of the great ones, which is also Ziad, I guess.
Ziad wasn't a great one, but his staff was a gift from the great ones. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the great ones are star touch elves.
Seems like, or magical beings who made all of these staffs that we see. I guess the great ones also made this sun staff that Claudia has and stuff.
Yeah, it's a really interesting backstory. Also, we learn some new dragons. For example,
so the queen is called
Luna Tenebris.
Yeah.
And there was also a human queen, Aditi.
Who was who we know about already.
She
was the grandmother? Or like, it was how Aravos got into Lux Aurea in the first place. He said that he could tell them what happens to Queen Aditi.
Okay.
Because no one knows still.
And yeah, we learned that Aravos is an evil being, apparently, because he pulled strings for thousands of years, like a puppet master, and whispering in people's ears. Not only people, high mage. Mm-hmm. Or
mages.
Mages.
Yeah. People obsessed by magic.
Yeah, exactly. Like Callum.
Callum, be careful.
Yeah, he's also no ordinary enemy. He is a being from the heavens with vast and mysterious powers. And even with allied archdragons, they didn't risk a direct confrontation because he's so powerful.
It's crazy.
What the fuck?
They also said, they said this thing with him being a being from the heavens, but they said literally a being from the heavens. I'm not sure. Was he literally a star that turned into an elf?
She said something.
Yeah.
Now he's fallen because he's imprisoned, but he was a star.
He was a star.
Yeah. Like a sun. Wow.
Yeah.
Had his own galaxy or something.
But they managed to secretly catch him and put him in this prison. And the scene where they're kind of trapping him, there's a couple of figures there. One is in the credits later.
Yeah.
And actually the one that seems to be kind of casting the spell looks like an elf that we've not seen before. She looked like kind of a sea elf. Yeah, to me, that's interesting.
Yeah, it happened so fast, and there were so many new characters. Mm-hmm. I didn't look closely, but yeah.
Yeah, it just piqued my interest because I was like, oh, another kind of elf. So now we've got the Earthblood ones and the Star Touch ones. And
And yeah, they had some pieces of puzzles made. For example, the Looking Glass, which is also the title. And the mirror. So no one knows exactly where Aravos is imprisoned.
Yeah,
Also clever and really wow.
Yeah, and the Avizandum then was given this enchanted looking glass to keep an eye on Aravos.
Yeah, that's why Viren got it, and then now Callum.
Question. How did Viren get the mirror and the egg back to Catullus?
On a horse?
But him alone? Like, we see, you know, Sauron can pick it up, but Sauron's...
Yeah, but he was also with Harrow, and I think they also had horses with carriages.
Yeah, I thought it was just Viren and Harrow, just the two of them on horseback.
Yeah, good question. Yeah. Maybe they, you know, catch the others going in front, and then put the mirror and egg onto the carriages.
I don't know, but just how I remember that.
Could also be magic.
Magic, I know. Magic is always the answer.
Like, hey, Akio, mirror.
I'm just going to use my magic tentacles here and pick up the mirror. Exactly. But yeah, I was just thinking about it because of, you know, it was so heavy and Sauron picked it up and I was like, okay, Sauron, yeah. But Viren, nah.
Sauron picked it up with Kellum attached.
Yeah, true. But I just, was just imagining, you know, Viren on horseback holding this massive egg. Also, Harrow didn't know that he had the egg, huh? He thought he'd destroyed the egg.
Yeah.
So somehow secretly he had this egg in this mirror, like, while they traveled on horseback back home while Harrow... injured.
That's interesting. Or, you know, Viren went there again with some other people who helped him.
But they had to, he had to do it real quick because Zubea was just off feeding or something.
Mm.
And Abazandum was looking after the egg. So I think time was also precious. I don't know.
Yeah, or maybe he, you know, like stopped time for everyone else.
He has a time turner.
And then shrinked the mirror and the egg and
A good one,
and put it in his pocket, and then
I like that. It was a shrink me spell for sure. He shrank them, he put it them in his little
Hermione bag
coin pouch. Oh dear, okay, I think we've solved it. but it was bugging me.
And everyone knows the story now, and they fly back to the Stormspire, and there's someone on the pinnacle, but not moving at all.
Yeah.
I find it a little bit funny. It's dark humor, I know. Sim is maybe thinking, why didn't I eat my veggies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gave Ibis a big nuzzle, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, he gets hacked by all and...
Yeah, but then they get back into the Stormspire and Zubea's like, yeah, he was, you know, a great friend. He wasn't even just a mage to me, but we can't spend time grieving because we've got things to do. Aravos is out there and we need to do something about it. And then they start looking in the mirror. And Zubea already explained how easy it is just to look into the mirror. It just has to be dark, which we already knew, but poor Kellum didn't.
But there we have also another title again, In Darkness Gaze Upon a Fallen Star. Well, not a title, but the runes translated around the mirror.
And now it all makes sense.
It makes sense, totally. Yeah. And they can look into the other side after Zubea creates a storm. And yeah, of course it's working because she's a storm dragon.
Yeah.
That's what she does.
It better be working.
And they see the fallen star for the first time, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, Aravos is taking over Kellum.
Yeah, and then kind of makes comments on everybody.
Speaks in his voice also.
Yeah.
It puts on a lot of negativity.
He's messing with them.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
He's manipulating them. He's, you know, like he does with his whispering in people's ears, getting to, you know, digging in, getting to the things that they already fear about themselves or whatever.
Totally. Yeah, pathetic children, divining child king, the moon shadow assassin who cannot kill, failed son, and the father wishes he had never been born, and the human mage. Already tainted by darkness and destined to play right into his hands.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found it nice that Bate comforted Sauron when...
Yeah.
Like he was stroking Sauron's foot. Yeah. That was really nice.
Yeah. And Aurora's time has come. The return is inevitable. And then we also see the being emerging.
Yeah,
at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My time has come, he says. Yeah. And blows a kiss and smashes the mirror.
Yeah, that's really wow.
Yeah.
How can he destroy the mirror from the outside? You know, like what?
From like and destroying that mirror as well.
Yeah.
That mirror is connected to the other mirror.
Yeah. Also, you know, like, hey, I want to sit. Okay, Akio chair, like in his mind. And then...
I want to sit there. Yeah. Yeah, it was all... It's all really crazy, huh? And he possesses Callum from wherever he is.
Yeah.
And just does it and doesn't need any special ingredients or... I was wondering if the only reason he could possess Callum was because Callum had done
this one dark magic
spell. Yeah. And like he said, is now tainted.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I think otherwise it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Ah, it's such a shame.
Or because, you know, Callum also wishes to be a mage or wished for a long time and then now is a mage and, you know, wants to get more powerful also, I guess. With more Skywing spells or something.
Yeah, but you think that he couldn't have possessed him if he hadn't have done that dark magic spell.
Then. Maybe. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. That it's just a real shame. But without that spell, Pyro wouldn't have survived.
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame that it's like, yeah, good intentions don't count then in that aspect. And... without that, actually, he wouldn't have gone through his whole magical journey and might not have been able to connect to the primal sources as
well. Yeah, totally, yeah.
So, it's a bit crazy.
It made sense, but yeah, now it's not so good.
One mistake that you can never...
Yeah, last thing I have to say about this, there is, according to the wiki, several animation errors where Aston's backpacks keep appearing and disappearing, but we only saw it one time, so... production team, again, time and budget.
Yeah.
Happens to the best.
Overarching themes or title? We can talk about the title.
Title, Through the Looking Glass. Of course, it's the second book, I think, from Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
The Looking Glass, called by the Archdragons. AKA a mirror.
Yeah.
I think
it's clear. And also kind of looking through the looking glass and learning all of this history, kind of.
Yeah.
Like looking through that lens, perspective, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had lots of introductions as well, lots of new faces, questions, like this human girl who kind of figured Aravos out. Who was she? She doesn't have a name.
Sobeya didn't mention any name.
Yeah. And she has Aravos' key as well in the thing. So it's like, okay, what's the story there? I'm sure we're going to get that at some point.
Yeah.
Excited to hear it. Yeah. And we saw like new dragons as well that we've not seen before and stuff.
But we didn't learn the names, right?
Yeah. I think I only got the names from the wiki, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, spells we already talked about a bit. Did we already say the long spell that Claudia used, what it was?
Yeah, I did you say it. And there's also, I found in the wiki, Wings of the Dead by Claudia. Maybe in the fighting scene, I don't know. Or I don't know at what point they use it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Maybe the wings that she had in the beginning, but we didn't see her do that spell for flying down. Anyway.
And Sobeya creating the storm, Vocare Nimbum.
Ah, yeah.
And the best spell of all, Flexio.
Flexio, yes. That brings us to the jelly tarts.
Yeah. We have so many. From the first chapter, doing the comedy show.
You might recall my name is Sorin, but from the looks of you flying overhead, you're the one who is Sorin.
How do you tell a dragon's weight? Use dragon scales. It's very funny.
I like the fact that he like explained what scales do.
Yeah, and then she's just like, yeah, it's very funny.
It's very funny. I wouldn't want my comedy routine to drag on.
And then she starts like this, you know, the fake laughter. Trickling,
yeah.
And then starts bursting in
She busts out laughing, and she's stamping her feet, very, very, very good.
Yeah.
And everyone's just, especially Corvus, super happy for Soren and for everyone that went well.
Yeah, Esrin also.
Yeah.
That was surprisingly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the next chapter... we have, with the mirror, Soren's got a primal source of his own. It's called muscles.
Yeah.
Flexio!
Totally cool. Okay. That was it.
almost all the funny moments, which is from Soren.
Yeah, not a lot of funny moments going on.
Yeah, but we have been introduced... to chocolate now, it seems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Brown sludge tart is chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Also nice with the sigil.
Yeah.
The crown.
Yeah, well, let's get onto that now. So in the credits.
Yeah. In the first chapter, we see the statue of King Harrow with candles in the Valley of the Graves.
Then we have comedy Soren sitting on a stool doing his show.
Then we see Claudia with the amulet and matching earrings. Of course, sparkly.
Mm-hmm. A Zadian cello, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that was the Corvus's instrument.
What Corvus was playing.
We see the chrysalis.
And we see Ibis with wings stretched out.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah. I had a question mark, was it Ibis or was it Callum? But I think it was Ibis because
I looked at the hair, I think it was Ibis.
Yeah.
And it was it would be fitting.
Yeah.
As totally. A kind of goodbye.
Yeah.
So the next chapter.
We have the mysterious person in the credits, which was also seen at the prison thing.
When they were putting Aravos in the magical prison.
Yeah.
There's like, you see three people clearly standing around, and this person is like, you see them from the back. So you can see that the clothing is the same and stuff, but you don't see their face in this. That was, it was pointed out by someone on the Dragon Prince wiki, but it's clear once you know it. And to me, they look like an elf as well. They have like pointiness.
And they have keys around their neck.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. They had keys around their neck. I didn't even notice that. Yeah. Okay.
But only in the credits. Okay. You see the face and the keys.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we'll meet them in the future.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So then we have the brown sludge tart and what looks like a Catullus chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jana was saying a minute ago with the...
crown sigil, maybe. Yeah.
Symbol on it.
Yeah. Yeah, we see the broken looking glass or mirror.
Then Bait sleeping in Callum's scarf.
Bait and a big loaf of Kumpranickel.
took me a minute. I was like, what, Bait on a stone? What's going on?
Okay,
it's the Kumpranickel.
I watched it today and I was like, that's the loaf.
That's it, yeah.
That's the Kumpranickel.
And we get Aravos with his Callum puppet.
Well,
that's quite cool. Quite a cool image.
Callum also looks a little bit lifeless, you know, like... nothing going on there, and
looks really like a puppet, like wooden. A puppet. Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy stuff. Excited to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah. I think that's it.
That's it. Okay. Then, thanks for listening. We've been your hosts. We've been News from the Breach, and we'll try and make another episode soon.
Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
The